Okay, we finalize our board meeting today with some narrow scope amendments. I give the floor to Lakin?
Yes.
Or Ellen first?
Just follow the little papers.
Okay.
Thank you. So paper 12A, which was, the topic is the total process consideration for narrow scope amendment to IS 19, like I spoke in. At the last meeting, the ISV tentatively decided to publish an exposure graph for projects about availability of refund and remeasurement at the from amendment, curtailment, or settlement. In appendix A of this paper, we have summarized the due process steps, and we note that the required due process steps have been or will be completed. As presented in page 5 of this paper, we had 4 questions to you. The first question is whether any of you intend to dissent from the proposed amendment. Can we go to the second?
Yes.
The second question is whether the ISV is satisfied with the due process steps required to date that relate to the publication of the proposed amendments.
Everybody happy?
Everybody happy.
The third question is whether the ISV agrees with a comment period of no less than 120 days as a normal period.
Could we say what date we decide, which is 120 days, instead of deciding no less?
No less and no more.
Okay. Well, I think the thing is, if it's ready, it goes out and the comment period ends on a Saturday or a Sunday, it doesn't seem to make much sense. So we normally say, well, it's just going to run late, which is why this
webinar is. We're self-insane. So if we had just said 120 days and it was on a Saturday, we would not have felt the freedom to move it to Monday.
We could have announced the main artist.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
120.
So, despite this, do we give the staff permission to ballot?
Yes.
Okay,
the last question for us is whether the staff had permission to ballot the
Yes.
No less than
120. Paper 12B deals with the due process of a bundled exposure draft that will amend IFRS 10 and IS 28. The ED will include proposals from 2 projects. Last year's work to amend IS 28 with respect to the elimination of gains and losses on transactions between an entity and its associated joint venture. And January's proposals to clarify the interaction of IFRS 10 and IS 28 on the initial recognition of an equity accounted investment that remains when an entity loses control of a subsidiary on its transfer of a subsidiary to an associate or joint venture. Agenda paper 12B refers to the due process paper that was presented at the January 2014 meeting for due process compliance on the first project, and appendix A to today's agenda paper lists the due process steps followed with respect to the 2015 proposal. Now, as an aside, the ED has the current working title, Sale or Contribution of Assets Between an Investor and its Associate or Joint Venture 2015. I think that title may lead these proposals to be confused with the September 2014 amendment, and I think the actual ED will be balloted with a more unique title. The questions, though, for you today on page 8 are, do any ISB members intend to dissent? Now, I know that the 2014 project contains a dissent by one board member, and that will be carried through into the combined ED when it's balloted. Are there any additional dissents with respect to the 2015 proposals?
Can I just ask a question? So, some of us dissented to the original amendment, the 10-28 interaction. I think 3 or 4 of us dissented from that. I wasn't, even though I was one of those dissenting, I wasn't planning to dissent on this one because it's not really changing, it's clarifying what we had before, and I just wondered, do you think that's the logical way to approach it, not to dissent even though I don't agree with the actual original amendment? This is fixing something.
But your original dissent will be noted.
Well, the original dissent stays in the top and bottom.
Hang on, the dissent on the one he's proposed in November, that will stay because that's part of these amendments.
Yeah, but our dissents on the other document.
The
sitting end of the table will be attached to the bound volume version.
They stay with the original documents. It's the
so
same.
It still exists.
Yeah. We've had that before. As long if you're only changing part of it, you have to keep the original dissents because you can't change history.
Yeah. But we don't need to read dissents.
No, you're saying you disagree with the original, but this is the right fix.
Yeah.
And the fix that is brought here doesn't change. It doesn't solve your problem, your initial problem is still there, even with the fix.
Well, paradoxically, it would have, because of the lack of clarification, I might have got what I thought was the right answer.
Is there a process by which you can withdraw your dissent, your initial dissent, as a result of a fix being brought about by...
It's okay.
Doug, thank you. Just a question. I'm one of the dissenting member of one of the only one, maybe. Dissenting is just part of the downstream transaction. So I think it will be made clear that I'm dissenting only this part.
Yes.
When we're proposing. So my question is, this is the combined proposal, in a sense, like an annual amendment. So the question is, when the constituents want to reply to those questions, can they make clear they are agreeing with this part and they are not agreeing with this part?
The exposure draft will have 6 or 7 different questions, so we ask them in turn about each of the proposals.
So then the board discussion also discuss it separately, or are we going to discuss it in a combined basis?
When it comes back.
When it comes back,
the comment letter analysis will deal with each individual aspect that people have commented on.
Right, okay.
Yes. So we should have separation between all the different components of the
process.
Is anyone, are there any other dissents attended? The next question, do you agree with the staff recommendation that the proposal should be applied prospectively and that early application should be submitted?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you agree that no specific additional relief is required for first-time adoption?
Back to question two. Prospectively, but early application permitted, or but in terms of those who have a problem today with the initial thing that we are correcting, how will they be able to take it into account in closing, say, the financial statement for 2015, assuming we adopt the standard by the end of this year? Will they be able to take the benefit, even if we say the application date is 1/16 or whatever?
We say earlier application is permitted.
Yeah, is that time to
that's
have
another question too.
Oh, sorry.
And you agree that there's no special relief for first-time adoption?
Yes.
Correct.
Are you satisfied that the due process steps for the combined ED have been complied with?
That's the case.
Yes.
And do we have permission to ballot the exposure draft?
Yes.
Just one comment. So this will be 120, no less than 120 days as well?
This will be on the same basis, yes.
Yeah, because there is no question.
Sorry, there is a paragraph 20, you just state that we'll be doing it. Thank you.
All right.
Updates, if we can. I was taken as read. Mike is unable to be here today. The only thing I wanted to mention is essentially what's something that's coming up. You'll see in the next IFRIC meeting, I think, the return of the IFRIC, this 11 issues on joint operations. So about 8 or 9 rejection notices coming back to me is hopefully the completion of that being set. But if there are any questions in here, I'm sure one of the board members who attended can ask them for you. Are there any issues or anything you want to raise?
This IAS 21 thing on page 3.
Yep.
Transportation's Committee direction on this. I think it should be an exchange rate that is adjusted. And I'd like to try and explain why by using a simple example, which is just to expand on. So what they're saying is that if you receive cash in advance in a foreign currency, you translate it on that date, and then that becomes your revenue later, and there's no retranslation. My question is, what if I don't receive the cash, but I bill in advance, so I issue a receivable in advance? Now, under IFRS 15, that means I have a contract, liability and a receivable, and they exactly offset. But what this will mean is that I will retranslate the receivable, my normal process, I will not retranslate the contract asset, and it seems to me that produces a mismatch, in that I get an exchange difference between the date of receiving the cash and then performing, which actually isn't an exchange difference because, well, nothing's happened. I have a contract asset, contract liability, and a receivable.
So you're saying the receivable gets retranslated at the spot rate?
Yeah, the receivable will be retranslated up until the point I receive the cash, and the contract liability will not be retranslated in accordance with this proposal. And I don't think the resulting exchange difference that we get has a great deal of economic meaning.
Yeah, so we're saying that only deal with cash, the difficulty is if they only deal with the cash situation, but you analogize, and then there's a question about what is the initial transaction that caused IFRS 15. And so it may be that you end up analogizing and get the same answer as Steve's pointed out.
So you raise that with Hannah. Because I think the logic that the committee's been using is that if you receive cash on that day, you no longer have an exchange risk. Whereas if you've got a receivable and you're still waiting to receive the cash, that's different. But
I
we can flag that for Hannah to look at.
I think that Hannah's going to try and develop some simple examples and work through.
I think my point is that this needs wider consideration. Have they, for example, thought about non-cash consideration and whether that should be measured? And what about the interaction with the time value of money aspects of IFRS 15? Do I accrete at the interest rate in the foreign currency or the interest rate in the local currency? I think there are wider issues here, and I'm worried about solving one narrow issue and all the knock-on consequences and multiple interpretations thereafter.
That is true, but I think the committee has decided to address only the question they were asked, which is that small, limited scope, and not to do a whole consideration of all the issues. Especially they said if there is time value of money, if it is a prepayment which has a financing component, then it's a different story. They did not want to address it because it would be a big project for the committee. So they try to address a situation where you got the cash, it is non-refundable, there is no risk of you having to repay it. With your cash, you translate it once you get it, and you have no risk on it, that's it. And that's your revenue because you have no longer risk. And the only thing they want to say, and it's true there are some other questions, like when you combine it with a pre-build, creating liability, but I think it was the committee's idea not to go beyond the question.
But I think it's the wrong answer that they're getting to.
Well, it's a question of scope of what they can do.
Even if cash is received.
Because I think if you have a contract liability, I think that contract liability should be retranslated. I know it's a non-monetary item, but I think not retranslating it gives a silly answer.
Do you think it's the wrong interpretation of IAS 21, or do you think IAS 21 is giving you the wrong answer?
The latter.
I think it's the latter. I think the problem is that IAS 21 results in
I agree with
outcome,
you,
but this is the right interpretation of IAS 21 as it's written.
The main thing is Hannah knows that there's concerns.
I think you're right. I think the nurtures.
And if it is an appropriate interpretation of IAS 21, but you think it's the wrong answer, then it needs to be clear that if it is counterintuitive as an answer, you have to make it quite clear that it is a valid interpretation. I think the.
Okay, well, I would question whether it's a valid interpretation because I would question whether the contract liability really is a non-monetary item. Because you say it's non-refundable. Well, if you don't perform, It's only non-refundable in the assumption that you perform, and you haven't yet performed.
Then you wouldn't have a receivable. You'd have a contract asset, right?
Well, you...
Or net.
I've only got a receivable because I billed. In my example, I sent out an invoice.
But you can only have a receivable if you performed and entitled to consideration under the standard.
But I could see that you were winding it back and saying, even if you received cash, on the receipt of cash, you've now got something in the bank, that creates the need to create the liability to perform. And you're saying the liability to perform is should be a monetary asset. Should be a monetary liability.
Monetary items are very narrowly defined.
And the question was, if you got the cash and you have performed before the end of the period, there have been a variation in exchange rate during that period, should you record a theoretical amount of revenue and try to find out what exchange gain or loss you had during the period, or should you book the transaction at the price at the date you got the cash? Because you have performed. At the end of the period, what's the point of trying to find out that you had 98 theoretical revenue at X transaction rate and 2 of gain during the period because you got the cash a bit earlier at a better rate? It was thought that it wasn't very useful in terms of information when you have everything closed in the period. Now, if you have an ITT at the end of the period, that may be a different
We don't want to discuss this. Identifying the issue so I can make sure we take it back.
We'll take that to the committee when we have the next
one. I was going to say it relates to an issue that the Transition Resource Group has had a preliminary discussion of, which is the general issue of non-cash consideration. While this is about cash, it's the revenue component is a related issue. I think the Transition Resource Group has had this interpretation committee issue flagged up for them, and we just have to make sure that we, you know, feed the consequences back and forth. So that may provide a better platform for some discussing some of the issues that Steve has raised.
All right.